Hello and welcome to News 24 on Air, our live audio service. I'm Ihlali Ntsabo. It's the biggest breaking story of the day. The Constitutional Court has ruled that former President Jacob Zuma is ineligible to run as Member of Parliament and has newly formed Umkhonto we Sizwe party due to his 15-month contempt of court sentence. The unanimous decision was passed down by Justice Leona Theron this morning.
This court concludes that Mr. Zuma was convicted of an offence and sentenced to more than 12 months imprisonment for the purposes of Section 47(1)(e) of the Constitution and is accordingly not eligible to be a member of and not qualified to stand for election to the National Assembly until 5 years have elapsed since the completion of his sentence. In the result, the following order is made. The applicant is granted leave to appeal directly to this court. It is declared that Mr. Zuma was convicted of an offence and sentenced to more than 12-month imprisonment for purposes of Section 47(1)(e) of the Constitution and is accordingly not eligible to be a member of and not qualified to stand for election to the National Assembly until 5 years have elapsed since the completion of his sentence.
The former president will now be eligible to serve in Parliament in 2027. Dan Mafora, senior researcher at the Council for the Advancement of the South African Constitution and News 24 legal specialist writer Karen Morn, now join us on the line to tell us more about the Apex Court ruling. Dan and Karen, thank you both for joining us. Karen, let's start off with you. So this morning, Justice Theona was also quite vocal in a criticism of the Apex Court's decision to jail the former president for contempt of court after he failed to appear before the State Capture Commission of Inquiry, and also gave a brief history of the litigation that preceded the court's ruling today. Could you perhaps give us a summary of what she said?
Well, I mean, she was initially critical when the court ruled in that contempt case, but in this case, she actually wrote a unanimous decision on behalf of the court, which essentially upheld in the most, you know, deep sense that the sentence and the conviction imposed on Jacob Zuma by the Constitutional Court could not be, not said to amount to a conviction for an offence and to a sentence that essentially rendered him ineligible under that section of the Constitution to serve in the National Assembly. And what was fascinating, and Dan will back me up on this, is that she had been in both the initial decision on the contempt, she disagreed with it, and there was a lot of exchange between her and Justice Sissy Kompepe at the time. And also in the rescission decision, she disagreed with it. But she came out and essentially said that this ruling stood, that there was no way in which, just because it couldn't be appealed, which was the basis upon which the Electoral Court found that it didn't constitute a sentence, that that meant somehow Jacob Zuma was exempt from this disqualification. So really, coming out to bat for a ruling that she didn't disagree with, and I think fundamentally upholding that respectful rule of law that is at the center of a constitutional democracy.
100%. The Concord also made a verdict on former President Zuma and the MK's party's case for the recusal of the judges in this case and found that no case had been made. On what grounds exactly did Zuma and the MK party apply for the recusal?
They essentially, I mean, it was quite a problematic argument on a number of levels, and it has been a salient feature of the former president's litigation strategy. But they essentially argued that the court as human beings, those justices, would be humanly disinclined to accept that their judgment may have been problematic or to reevaluate their judgment in the light of the violence that ensued when the former president was jailed. I mean, that's a deeply problematic argument. And they also argued that he had a reasonable perception of bias on the part of these justices. Of course, we know that the court ultimately found that there was no basis or no evidence of that. And they said that it was indeed in the interest of the justice for the Constitutional Court to consider Jacob Zuma's eligibility, because it really was a matter of public interest for ordinary people to be able to know whether or not he in fact qualified for appointment to the National Assembly.
Right. Dan, let's now bring you into the conversation. We know that Justice Leona kept on reiterating that the focus should be on the sentence imposed on the former president and not the time served. Perhaps could you give us a breakdown of where the Electoral Court could have erred in its judgment?
Sure. So what Section 47(1)(e) says is that anyone who's convicted of a crime and sentenced to a sentence 12 months imprisonment with no option of a fine, without the option of a fine, is disqualified from standing for election to the National Assembly. But it also adds that you are not considered convicted and sentenced until any appeals have been finalized or the time period for an appeal has expired.
Right.
So how the Electoral Court interpreted that section was basically to say that one that if your sentence is not capable of an appeal, right, as contemplated in Section 47(1)(e), then you are not affected by the disqualification because the section says you are not considered sentenced until any appeal is finalized or your period for an appeal has expired.
Right.
And then the second thing that they said, this was said by the majority in the Electoral Court, was that because Mr. Jacob Zuma was granted a remission of sentence that had the effect of reducing his sentence from 15 months imprisonment to 3 months imprisonment, right? So on those two bases, they decided that the section did not qualify Mr. Zuma. Now, what the Concord did today was to say, one, clarify the meaning of Section 47(1)(e) to say that the proviso that talks about appeals only suspends the operation of the disqualification, right? So what it basically says is if you have a sentence that's imposed on you that's more than 12 months, and you still have the opportunity to appeal, that disqualification doesn't kick in until you've exhausted all of your appeal options, right?
Right.
But it doesn't mean that if your sentence, for example, in the case of Mr. Zuma, is as a result of a contempt of court at the highest level, right, and your sentence is imposed by the Constitutional Court, because there isn't another court that you can appeal to, that doesn't mean the section doesn't apply to you. Mm. All it means is that the disqualification kicks in immediately because there isn't an option of appeal.
Right.
And then on the second part, they say that the legal effect of a remission has no effect basically on the initial sentence that's imposed. So if you are sentenced to 15 months, and you get remission for 12 months, and you spend only 3 months in jail, you were still sentenced to 15 months.
Mm.
The mere fact that you were granted a remission of sentence doesn't change the initial sentence, which is what the Electoral Court held.
Right. And so I just for clarity, Dan and Karen, could the remission of the former president's sentence be the reason why there was so much confusion around Section 47(1)(e) of the Constitution and whether or not actually it applied to him or not in terms of the disqualification?
Yeah, so it's, look, to me, when I listened to the arguments in the Electoral Court, that actually didn't seem to be the huge issue, like the cornerstone of their case, right? Their case was about the appeal proviso in that section. But I think that from a legal standpoint, remission could never have had that effect. And I think that was pretty much recognized because the power of remission, like, is a power that the parole board has, for example. Mm. So to say that, you know, a remission changes the sentence that is imposed was not consonant with our law to begin with, and would have had serious implications for the separation of powers.
Right.
So I don't think that is what caused the confusion. I think there were a lot of other arguments that were made that just sowed a lot of confusion about what the correct legal position is.
Right. Karen, anything you...
No, I think that Dan sums it up perfectly. But I think what is at the heart of this and what the court emphasized is that, you know, there was no disqualification in the Constitution that said, oh, this doesn't apply to constitutional court decisions where there's no appeal. And I think that Thembeka and Gwaiatobi for the IEC really stressed that point, that if there was going to be this kind of disqualification, it would have been made explicit in the law. Mm. And, you know, he's totally right. The proviso was there to make sure that someone who is appealing a ruling isn't suddenly disqualified while there's an appeal process ongoing. And that makes perfect sense. But the court ultimately stressing that the purpose of that disqualification, based on, you know, being found, guilty of an offense that has a longer than 12-year sentence, is that it's maintaining, quote unquote, maintaining the integrity of South Africa's democratic regime, which is founded on the rule of law by ensuring that members of the National Assembly possess the requisite respect for the rule of law. And I think that, you know, in the specific circumstances, and the court didn't go into it. I mean, I've been reading the judgment and I haven't seen them really emphasize the sentence or the contempt that Jacob Zuma was found guilty of. But ultimately, in that contempt ruling, it was at its heart about rule of law. Mm. Jacob Zuma's fundamental refusal to accede to a court order that's imposed by the apex court of the country that says you need to account to the state capture inquiry for the accusations that are leveled against you by more than 30 people in regard to your administration and these very serious allegations that you essentially allowed South Africa to be, for all intents and purposes, captured by private interests. And him refusing to accede to that and essentially holding himself to be above the law. And in that sense, I think Tehran emphasizing that in the brief broadcast today was really about getting back to the heart of that judgment in its fullest sense, that contempt ruling, which Sisi Kampepe made clear at the time, was about an innate commitment to defense of the rule of law.
Right. Another question to the both of you. So there was also conversation and a bit of concern over Zuma's eligibility, right? To the point where the IEC even argued that his possible eligibility ran a substantiated risk of a disputed electoral outcome. And I think, Karen, you actually extensively wrote on this. But I'm just curious to find out from the two of you, how does this ruling now solidify the future standing and foundation of our democracy? Dan, I'll start off with you.
Yeah, look, I think this was, in the end, a very necessary judgment.
Mm.
One, because it provides clarity and finality on, one, the powers of the IEC, which is something that Zuma had questioned in the electoral court, to enforce Section 47(1)(e), but also the meaning of Section 47(1)(e). And, you know, the IEC now knows who to disqualify, under what circumstances, and you know, political parties will now have to, when they submit their list to the IEC, make sure that the people on those lists actually meet the requirements, or are not disqualified by Section 47(1)(e). And so I think this is a good thing. I think that for all the controversy and the confusion that it has caused, the outcome is one that will strengthen our constitutional democracy going forward.
Right. Karen, final thoughts?
Absolutely. I agree with Dan. And I just think it's important that this clarity is reached, because I think the electoral court decision left many people, rightly or wrongly, with the impression that the judges were almost bending over backwards to make an exception for Jacob Zuma. Mm. Now, many people will argue that the way in which he was convicted and sentenced of contempt by the Constitutional Court was very unusual. And we know that Liana Turan, Justice Liana Turan, was very concerned. And it came through in her dissenting judgment in both the contempt and the rescission that, you know, he had been denied his appeal rights. And he really, that was a real issue that came back, that was sort of the underlying text, was the way in which he was sentenced and the way he went to prison. But I also think that there was a real danger with, also with the arguments employed by the former president, that there was this underlying tension of, well, if we don't get what we want, you know, this potential for July unrest, this potential for tragic loss of life, it's on the undercurrent. And that is the beginning of a mafia state. That is not a legal argument. And I think the court has to be respected for holding the line unanimously in circumstances where that unanimous ruling was based on a judgment that fractured the court in a very profound and very public way, that they have returned and they have said, this is what the law says and this is what we maintain. And they haven't been intimidated in the way that I think many people may regard the electoral court as potentially having been intimidated with a ruling that really, even to someone who isn't legally trained, did not make any sense.
Right. And that's it. We'll have to leave it for now. Karen Moore, News 24 specialist legal writer, and Dan Mafora, senior researcher at the Council for the Advancement of the South African Constitution. Thanks for joining us. And you can, of course, find our breakdown coverage of the judgment on news24.com. That's all we have for now. Until next time, I'm Mihlali Ntsabo.